Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Right. Hello. Right. Good-o.
What's that? You've never started the podcast like that before. Are you having a breakdown?
Yes. I'm feeling we're in the presence of like a podcasting, like he knows about podcasting. Should I start the podcast now before
we've done 250 episodes? I mean, no, you're right. We know absolutely fuck all.
Shit. Yeah. The bed.
Come on.
All right. Well, all
we
right.
should make him introduce it. He'd do a better job.
Oh, well, this is it. It's like we're sitting down to play Agassi or someone. You know, this is...
Have you been compared? You see this as combative. That's good. That's a really good. Really makes the guest feel at home, feel welcome. Poor man, he's not going to get a word in if you carry on like this.
Does he need to be here? I mean, who knows? All right, shall I? Let's just come on, Helen. Please. You can do this.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And today we are so excited because we have the wonderful, the talented, the incredibly experienced podcaster, Ollie Mann.
Thank you. Hello. I wasn't going to interrupt until you got to my name because I was just like, let's see how many platitudes you can pile on here. I'm enjoying them.
I'm really, really thrilled you're here because we've been a big fan of yours for a long time. I mean, you are like a podcasting guru.
I mean, I don't even want to say first, because we weren't. Like, you guys have been podcasting almost as long as we were.
Yeah.
By we, I mean me and Helen Zaltzman. We started in 2007.
Yeah.
But we weren't first. There were people who were doing it in 2004 and 2005. It's just that they were nerds. Like, they really were nerds.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, you know, I'm Evan, and this is my show about Windows 95 coding.
Right? Oh, that's one of my favourites.
Oh, the classics, yeah.
So I think we were perhaps amongst the first, and you are in this group as well, really. When did you start? 2010 or something?
2013.
Okay.
But 10 years.
We were lucky because we were sort of the first, not in, again, we weren't the first parenting podcast, but we were the first. We started because I was quite nerdy and quite techie, and I listened to podcasts and I'd done a games podcast, and I was like, oh, let's have a parenting podcast, that'd be good. And it was all just people, mainly Americans, talking about what car seat to buy and the best baby wipes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but yeah, someone asked us on another podcast just this morning, you know, they were like, oh, you were a pioneer. You're one of the... And I was like, that's right. What we used to do is we used to record it all on cassette, and then someone would type into the internet that we wanted to do. It would just play it down the microphone. Yeah, that's right.
But it's actually, I mean... So, I mean, my train of thought was we were kind of amongst the first, and I'd include you in this, of a generation of podcasters who were sort of native to it, and creating shows that had a showbiz element behind them, like an element of planning and editing and entertainment, rather than just the real first generation, which was nerds just talking to each other about how to do stuff. Helen genuinely used to send me edits on CDs in the post.
Not Helen Thorne.
Not Helen Thorne, Helen Zaltzman, yes, who I used to collaborate with and ask me this. So that is how long ago. I mean, it wasn't quite cassettes down a gramophone, but it was... To edit it, this is before Dropbox and before broadband.
Physical medium.
Yeah.
Physical, wow.
The horse and carriage would arrive.
Yeah.
The compact discs. But look, we're skipping ahead. Look, why don't you, for anyone who's not familiar with your legendary status as the inventor of podcasts, Ollie, why don't you introduce yourself for the listener?
Okay, so yes, I'm Ollie Mann. I've been podcasting since 2007. I went pro.
Makes you sound like an alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this feels like a support group, to be honest.
I've been doing it like for a job, for my living, since about, I think, 2011. So that ebbs and flows, you know. Some years it's been going really well. Some years I'm like, I'm not earning any money this year. But I have been, I guess, one of the few people from that original cohort in this country who, I don't work for a broadcaster, I'm making shows independently like you guys. So I do four podcasts. I do a daily show called Today in History with the Retrospectors. That's a new one. I do a monthly magazine show called The Modern Man, MANN. It's a pun on my name. It's not just for men. I do a weekly...
You should have called it Just for Men. Got a sponsor for my hair dye people.
I do a weekly current affairs show called The Week Unwrapped, which is for The Week magazine. And I do that show with Helen, Answer Me This, which, although we ended in 2021, we've just come back for an Easter special. So, you know, on a biannual basis.
That sounds dreamy. Should we just do it twice a year, Ellie? Like married couples?
It's the for me, like all the shows that I've made have been about providing people a mix of different things to think about. I feel like if you're in someone's head and they're really listening and on their headphones, on their commute, and they've chosen you out of all the other content in the world, it's quite nice to surprise them within that. So, like, if there's any common thread within all the things that I've done, I think it's that. Like, The Week Unwrapped has four news stories in it every week. Answer Me This was a selection of questions, everything from, it really was like, is my penis unusual, to... I'll save that for the Patreon. to, like, you know, what should I do about this dilemma with my neighbours, to why is this trivia thing a thing? You know, why do we call this and that this? And in The Modern Man as well, it's a magazine show. So, like, you know, we do sex advice, we do trends, and we do a middle feature. So I really like... It's a bit of public service in me. I feel like even though I've been making all these shows myself, there's an element of sort of BBC values. I think it's just really nice to take someone somewhere they're not expecting to go once they trust you, and you can bring it to them.
Helen, it feels like Ollie's really thought about like the content he's producing. Do you think we need to have a meeting?
And I keep thinking, we've talked about our kids' shit, we've talked about my sex life, we've talked about vomit. And I mean, how much does the listener get from that?
Well, they're sometimes surprised.
Yes, exactly right.
We are fitting into the Ollie Mann broadcasting strategy.
No, yes. you absolutely are. Because I've just had to explain who I am to the portion of your audience who don't know who I am. I mean, that is an example of it, isn't it? You'll have someone on next week who's totally different and someone on the week before who's totally different. And that's... You are doing that. We're doing that right now.
Yeah.
I think... people think that podcasting has to be narrowcast and you have to keep delivering the same thing all the time. And I just think the thing that's constant is the rhythm of the show and your connection with the audience, in my mind. And it doesn't sort of matter what the content is. I know that you're not supposed
to say that. That's been our philosophy.
Crossing our fingers.
I mean, that's why I got divorced, to be honest.
Just run out of things to talk about.
Yeah, because that's, just kind of keeping the magic alive.
So tell us about your other podcast. Tell us about The Retrospectors.
So when Answer Me This was coming to an end in 2021 as a regular show, which wasn't my choice. Helen had had enough.
Oh.
And
how was... Oh, God, see, that's what... You know, we've never had to have that conversation, but I was thinking, you know how Steps split up?
Yeah.
Oh, they came and just gave... H and Claire gave a letter to the rest of the band on Boxing Day on their penultimate concert... Yeah. On their last concert. Was it like that? Imagine all breakups to be like that now.
Well, breakup is an interesting thing, isn't it? It wasn't like a breakup because we weren't in a relationship. But, you know, because you've been going on tour together and you've been working together for so long, you've written a book together, we've done all that stuff as well. It was kind of like her saying, this thing that we do, this represents a version of me from a while ago. Basically, I mean, I'm interpreting as kind of what I think she thought. I mean, she was busy and she was kind of like, I don't know if I've got enough time to do this anymore. But also, I think she thought, this version of myself is a thing from when I was 25, 30 years old, and I've moved on. Like, I'm kind of, you know, I want to be authentic, and I want to carry on doing it, and I want to do something else. Whereas I kind of thought, but it's paying my mortgage. Why would you drop this? And so for years, we were kind of like, she really loved talking to the listeners and getting their questions and feeling like we created this product that people love, but she'd kind of had enough, and I was kind of like... Why don't we carry on to this point? Why don't we carry on to that point? And in the end, we kind of negotiated really to end at episode 400 because that was something that we all felt comfortable creatively was like, it just feels right. Like that's a number. It's a whole number. We've done a thing. We've completed a thing. 400 episodes of a thing. And like
just
I say,
writing this down, that's a rule. We've got about 3 years to go.
150 to go. That's fine.
I still wanted that feeling of, I didn't feel like I'd outgrown it. I mean, I'm basically still the same person I was when I was 15. So I thought, well, I want to carry on making a show that's about trivia, where I learn stuff, that has that connection with an audience. Is there a way of taking the Answer Me This template, which is like 8 random subjects in an episode, and chopping it up differently? So instead of it being a fortnightly thing that's 50 minutes long that you get in your pod feed, could I do it daily? Because daily was like the obvious thing that was gaining traction a couple of years ago. And so with Matt Hill, my producer that I work with, we created this format, which is, I mean, it's as old as the hills. It's a Today in History format. It is. On this day in history, this thing happened. But again, it's about that variety. So literally, you know, one day we will be doing the Nazis and the next day we'll be doing the invention of Tampax or whatever, you know. And it is just that complete mix-up of stuff, but only 10 minutes a day.
I've listened to your podcast. And 10 minutes is great because you can unload the dishwasher in 10 minutes. You can, you know, it can be a fantastic accompaniment to little things.
many things
you can do in 10 minutes.
Especially the recently divorced.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly. So yeah,
I recommend our Captain Birdseye episode for
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, Captain Birdseye.
Oh, that was a joy. That was yesterday, and I love that you're the unpacking of frozen food, so to speak, metaphorically, about the history of that. And the dude himself, but also you did reference that he's turned into a sexy dude.
Yes.
Which brings us back to me and Ellie that hot Captain Birdseye came to our 5th anniversary party.
The real one.
The real one was flown over from Italy. Because
he's Italian, yeah.
He's Italian. What was his name?
Eyes the colour of the Mediterranean.
Oh my God, very handsy. He spoke very little English, but he looked very pleased to be at
Did they defrost him for the occasion?
Yes, they did. Yes, yes. they cooked him for 14 minutes.
He sailed into port.
Yeah.
He came down the gangway. No, so he came down and he was... You know, so yeah, Birdseye flew him over, and he seemed like a nice man, but he didn't
Ricardo, speak. I think his name was.
Yeah, he didn't speak any English, and at that time I didn't speak Italian, and he just looked very confused, as you would be. So yes. Picture the scene, Ollie. Obviously, you know.
I can't have an Italian frozen food company, and I'm flown over by a frozen food corporation.
Your main job.
To be at the birthday party of a podcast in Italy.
That's right.
That would be weird. I couldn't do that.
Already, your world is like, your main job is being paid to dress as a fisherman.
Yeah.
To be very beautiful.
Yeah. To be very beautiful. And then you walk into this room and there's these two middle-aged women and they're wearing leotards with each other's faces on.
Yeah.
Like larger than life size.
I'm saying that's like it's a normal thing because I have seen that picture.
Standard, yes, yeah.
And then there's a cake in the middle of the room with a load of fish fingers on it, but they're not real fish fingers, they're cake fingers. And it's all very... And then all the guests are just mainly other middle-aged women.
Who were all overexcited.
Very overexcited.
All having selfie with him.
But wait, and then another an older man, a little bit older than you, comes over to you and starts jabbering at you. He's the only other man at the party and he starts jabbering you about acting, but you don't understand that because you don't speak English. That's my father. Imagine that happening.
Yes.
I mean, what are you... I've
just met your father and it layers on whole extra dimensions of complexity. Yeah. I can't imagine, but I'm sorry, maybe your regular listeners will know this more than I. Why was Captain Birdseye at your birthday party?
Well, basically, it turns out my real father... No, I'm joking.
You were conceived via the medium of fish fingers.
So years ago, the Daily Mail ran this article by a journalist, by a woman called Jan Moore.
Oh yes, Moyer.
Who wrote this thing about what is happening to Britain, broken Britain, look at all these awful scummy mummies. It wasn't just about us, it was about lots of our friends like Clemmie Telford and Steph Douglas and basically anyone who'd ever suggested that parenthood and motherhood might not be this idyllic, pastel perfect picture. And she used a bit from our book and said that we advertised giving our children frozen fish fingers without bothering to cook them for dinner, which of course we said as a joke.
Yeah.
Because we're comedians, the clue's in the name, but she didn't get the joke. But then it went viral because all these women in Britain started this campaign called Solidarity, TEA, and everyone did a hashtag and everyone took a picture of themselves giving their kids frozen fish fingers and chicken nuggets.
So Birdseye did very, very well.
So Birdseye paid us a moderate amount of money to be in an advert for them. And flew over the captain for our party and gave us a fish finger cake.
So I've got a question for you about the women of a certain age, Captain Birdseye sex thing.
Yes.
So Captain Birdseye is now this sexy Italian captain.
Sexy Italian,
fine.
Yeah.
Is that because, on some level, for 40 years... they were tapping into a housewife Santa Claus fetish thing. And then they were like, let's legitimise this by making him conventionally handsome. But actually, mum's always liked Captain Birdseye.
I think it was more that it was a pan-European marketing strategy. They wanted to get away.
You can tell you've been in Bird's Eye's pocket. You've got a suite of products. Our brand triangle.
That's a good question, isn't it?
I think there's always a sex thing with Captain Bird's Eye. That's what I think.
We should talk about that on our new spin-off podcast, Helen. Riddle me that. Coming to your screen soon.
No, I mean, yeah, podcasting's all about the niche. You just need to do a podcast series about which company mascots do you most want to fuck. Just that.
Oh.
Just the 10.
We have
you can
rated.
Do Uncle Ben.
I can't think of another one.
Do the Pillsbury donut guy.
KFC.
Exactly.
Ronald McDonald.
No.
Okay, so.
The Colonel.
We've done a Today in History with the Retrospectors about Colonel Sanders. So I learned all about him in researching that.
Well, tell us about Colonel Sanders.
So, well, the episode is called Finger Licking Lawsuit. I would recommend it. But basically, he had a massive payoff for selling his fried chicken. It was a genuine, he was a colonel, well, we go into that too, but let's say he was a colonel. Frying chicken by the side of the road, perfecting the recipe, secret spices, all that's true.
Yeah.
So he had built the business from scratch, and then he sold it for a fuck load of money.
Mm-hmm.
But then he went around slagging him off.
Oh.
Which I never knew. So, like, for the last 20
bitter,
years of his life.
Bitter.
He went around saying, this sauce tastes like horse shit. This gravy is appalling.
Oh.
Like, you've taken my authentic fried chicken and you've ruined it.
The gravy is shit, to be fair.
It's very watery.
It was all against the terms of his sale, obviously.
Oh.
But what are you going to do? You can't sue him because he's the company mascot. Like, it was literally his face on KFC.
So he didn't really take the golden handshake. He didn't perform his side of the bargain.
No, his side of the bargain was to be the face and shut up. But instead, he kept
shut up and take
about,
the money,
yeah,
Colonel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, this was
he had the might of the military behind him as well. Don't
yes,
forget.
Don't fuck with him
at any moment. They knew that.
Well, what he did launch, which I didn't know until we made this episode, and this is the problem with 10 minutes: we didn't have time in our episode to say this. So this is an exclusive for you.
Spin off.
What he did do is he launched his own rival fried chicken restaurant in his hometown. Yes.
No!
Which is still there.
Wow.
Named after his wife. And it's called, you know, Auntie Fanny's Chicken Bits or something. And you could, it's like the authentic KFC as the Colonel wanted it.
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
Wait, it's still there?
It's still there, yeah.
Where
yeah.
is it?
Yeah.
Is it in Kentucky?
Somewhere in Kentucky, yeah.
I'm going there!
Ellie,
yeah. I love going to crazy, mad places.
You must.
It's so fascinating. And the original KFC is a... like Museum of KFC as well, if you're interested.
Wow!
Yeah.
Oh, that's my next American road trip. That's done. And you might know this. Is it true? I read once that there's a secret 7 herbs and spices thing, right, to the chicken, and that formula is written on a piece of paper and locked in a vault, and that only like 5 people know it at any time, and they all have to travel on different planes in case they die in a crash. Is that true?
I have not independently researched that fact, but I have heard something similar.
Yeah.
I mean, corporate histories are really, really interesting when you look into how things came about. I'm trying to scour my brain to think of one that we've done recently, because we've done so many. But I absolutely love learning about how very often something that was a byproduct or a mistake became the main product, like the side hustle became the thing that then your business was known for. You know, companies that make industrial plastics and then they end up developing Barbie or whatever, that sort of thing. I think what we've done recently, which tapped into that. I mean, something that I've learned, I mean, this won't surprise you as women, but it surprised me as a man, is just how many times in recent history women have been sidelined from things they've invented.
Mm.
So, like, I keep learning this again and again and again. I'm like...
Well, like you claiming to be the inventor of the podcast. When
sure,
it
yes. Yeah. the woman who invented the at-home pregnancy test, we did an episode about that. She did that. Again, that was a side hustle. So she did that as, like, she worked as a graphic designer within the pharmaceutical company and saw what was required in the latest science... to actually work out whether or not you're pregnant and realise that it was replicable in a home setting and realise that for most women who wanted to find out whether they're pregnant or not, that would be preferable to going to a doctor and having an examination, and started developing it herself in her kitchen at home and created the prototype for what became the at-home pregnancy test.
Oh, man, imagine the scenes. Just
so much piss! So much piss!
Until you work out which one's...
Jugs of piss just ready to go in the fridge. Yeah.
And then took it to her boss, and her male boss was like, no, don't think so. We're happy charging lots of money to do the laboratory test, thank you. He then took it to his colleague in Holland, but not he didn't really take it. Like, he was like at a conference or something and just mentioned it.
Yeah.
And then in Holland, they were like, yes, that's a good idea. We should develop
this
that.
This is it. The Dutch always been more forward thinking.
Yes.
Very progressive.
But didn't tell her. started making the product she had designed and brought to her own company, started the making it.
Dutch, they've always been bastards. Wooden shoes, what's that about anyway? Idiots.
And then she, like Peggy in Mad Men style, kind of had to go along to the boardroom meeting where they were discussing her invention and say, excuse me, but I invented this. Can I have a seat at the table, literally?
Shit.
And then, of course, that became the thing that they're famous for. They created
the
at-home
coach. Did she get a seat at the table?
She did, although she didn't get the money she deserved. Like, you know, she was allowed to cooperate on the way it was developed.
So she was Mrs. Clear Blue?
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
But she wasn't a sciencey person. She was a graphic designer. Mm. Like, when you think about it, the elements within it are just what they did in the lab. Her foresight was to package it in a certain way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, intellectual property, that's another thing that time and again in Today in History with the retrospectives, I find, like, IP just wasn't well guarded until really recently. Like, you read about, like, Little Orphan Annie came out as, I'm trying to think what it was first, whether it was a comic first or...
I think it was a comic, but I'm saying that like a...
It was definitely a comic before it was a musical.
Right.
But I have a feeling it was something else before it was a comic.
A cave painting?
a book, a poem, something like that. I can't remember now. But the point is that within 40 years, people just nicked ideas and did them again. I mean, that just happens all the time through history until really recently. Like, or Jesus Christ Superstar, when, I mean, don't get me wrong, I read the Bible, you know, had gone through a period of, it was, you could rip off the story from the New Testament. But in 1971, when they premiered Jesus Christ Superstar in London, the album was selling so well in the United States because of evangelicals that people were mounting pirated productions over there without giving Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice the money for mounting that, because they said, we're performing your album, we're not...
Well, how do you think Jesus felt about
that? Exactly.
Jesus.
But that's 1971, and that had to go to court, and they had to say, no, this is our show, you're doing our show, you owe us money, as recently as that. So it's just sometimes just fascinating, like, realising the mechanics of what's going on behind the scenes of these things you take for granted, you know.
Yeah. We've had people email us going, oh, we really loved your comedy show. Would you mind, like, sending us the script and we'll put it on for our school play? No, not really. Oh, just, we love your songs. We'd like to do it. I'm like, no. I mean, we got the music from Bonnie Tyler originally, but,
yeah, but we pay
PRS.
We pay
PRS. Yes,
yeah. Pay her some money.
Yeah, but it's and also what I find funny, and you may not get this as a male, podcaster, is that people, after we do a show, they go, did you write that yourself? You laugh very loudly.
Yeah. No, I don't do that. No.
No. So yeah. It's sort of as a, you know, I think, yeah, we walk a different path as women, and so many times we've, you know, been overlooked and all that sort of thing for things, and then you see maybe two dads doing very well in the same sphere that we started like 10 years ago, and when they've said, no, but parenting's not going to be popular on this radio channel, and then two dads would do, you're like, but how is it different that two penises are in the room? Mm-hmm. Answer me this, Ollie.
Well, I mean, the dad thing is interesting because I think, so I also have noted the growth in men talking about parenting.
Mm.
Actually, again, I'm going to stake some claim there.
Yeah, so, definitely.
On The Modern Man, that other show that I do, we started doing a men talking about parenting slot in 2015. So that was, about 4 years before this became like the meme that's taking over the podcast charts. And that was me and, you know them, it was me and Stuart Goldsmith and Tom Price.
So yeah.
The three of us talk about our experiences being dads because, by complete coincidence, I promise we didn't time this, all three of us, our partners, had a son in December 2015/January 2016, like all at the same time.
Mm.
Which is really weird.
And I'm just going to say, I think that was also after you all met us for the first time.
Yeah.
So. And we went home and we were like, love, we need to time this for 2016.
Listen, it's the whole thing. Best lives.
Yeah.
So, but we never wanted to do it as like a weekly or a monthly show or anything. So it's just an annual slot on The Modern Man. Once a year we do a thing called How to Be a Dad. And the idea of that is to chart our experiences as dads on an annual basis. And see how it's changed us as people, really. So it's a different thing. We're not necessarily... I mean, it is funny because they're funny guys.
Yeah.
But we're not trying to be funny. We're just trying to compare notes.
Mm.
And there was a gap, I think, for men talking about those things because women were doing it more and more.
Yeah.
I think there was a need to talk about the male side of that experience, particularly like things like accompanying your female partner in childbirth.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that's worth discussing.
Mm.
Then you get on to like monitoring how much time they spend in front of CBeebies or whatever. I mean, I guess that's not really that gender specific.
Yeah.
But I did feel like The big shift for me, becoming a dad in 2016 was, and Tom and Stu sort of agreed with me on this, was that you go for, and I think this is particularly the case as a man, because somehow I think as a woman you sort of feel like inevitably this might be your destiny anyway. You know, time's ticking out, you know, you've got till you're 30 or 40 and then that's it. As a man, it's a bit of a shock. You don't have the 9 months pregnancy to get used to it really either. Mm. Like, you say you do to support the female partner, but really you're carrying on with stuff, right? And then suddenly you are no longer the hero of your own life. That's the shift that happens.
Mm.
So, and which, of course, like I say, women listening to this, I'm sure, will be like, yes. But it came as a shock to me because, like, my particularly, like, doing self-promotion for my own homemade shows, I'd done nothing but think about my own needs and what I wanted and my career and the things I was doing. And then suddenly you're like, oh, I'm doing all this for someone else.
Yeah.
And it's okay if I coast for a bit, so long as I'm earning enough money to pay to keep a roof above our heads and all that stuff. I think that is a big shift.
Some men find that very difficult to cope with and can't handle it, basically, and can't just coast.
No, they leave.
You know, doing something really dickish. But that's a story for another time.
Sounds like potentially a story you've discussed in the back catalogue.
But that's really good that you've acknowledged that, and I think that's important because other people would internalise it, get bitter, and then do really stupid things. But but we've had Stuart and we've had Tom on the podcast, and they've articulated parenthood very well. But we had Stuart on before and after. Yeah, which was great because he was like, oh, I'm this great godfather, and he'd done comedy for kids, and I think he had a real insight. But you can't actually prepare for parenthood. You can read and listen, but it's a deep gut feeling. It's a sort of animal response, and you are suddenly responsible for another human being, and that's lovely and frightening in equal measures. It's really terrifying because you're like, the love you have is so great. It's frightening. You think about all the ways they're going to die, basically, in the first year as well. Like, you can be overwhelmed by the love and the responsibility. And but it's good to laugh about it, I think, because it is so ridiculous, isn't it? Like, you can't.
Well, it's just all consuming, isn't it?
And yeah,
it's a really long game as well. I mean, Stuart's thing is quite interesting because he's a very creative person, and you know. Mm. I think his view of what it would be like to be a dad, and he does do this to an extent, sickeningly, like the dad in Bluey, just like, fucking, just take your foot off the pedal a bit, you know what I mean? Creating games and special moments and, you know, I'm going to make up a story for you at bedtime and all that. So
that's his street performer in him, though.
Yeah, right, it is, that's him. But it's like, I never wanted that as a father.
No.
I was just like, I want to not fuck this up, and I want to have a relationship with these people.
Mm.
But it's what you do when you're not paying attention, isn't it? It's what you do when they ask for your attention when you're doing something else.
Yeah.
That's when it matters. It's not when you've created a treasure hunt in the garden.
No.
It's when you're trying to watch the news and they're like, can you come and do this painting with me?
Yeah.
And inside you're thinking, no, leave me alone. That's when it's, you know.
Yeah. It's for me, it's about the 14th TikTok I've seen in the day, and I can't fake enthusiasm. Like, look at this. I'm like, no, I don't want to. I want to spend half an hour by myself right now.
I did see a good one the other day, though.
Yeah.
Would you rather eat a baby goat or a matter baby?
What's a matter baby?
Nothing. What's the matter with you?
That's good.
That's excellent.
That is good.
I heard that on a Tim Ferriss podcast with Brené Brown, but I thought I'd rob it for this one.
That is excellent. So what have you learned about parenting, Ollie? Like, I want to hear more about your sort of.
Yeah, I mean,
how old are you?
We often get asked advice, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
And I sort of think, I don't know. I feel in two minds about it. I feel on the one hand, like, because we all had that experience when you're pregnant for the first time, and people like go. They like tell you what it's going to be like for 3 hours, and then they tell you you can't possibly know what it's going to be like. And you sort of go, "Well, I've got an idea, thanks." Do you know what I mean? But it is, you can't. I don't know. Do you? So I feel funny about giving people advice as well, because everyone's experience is different.
But again, I think that's a male-female divide a bit as well. Mm. I think particularly because people, for some reason, I noticed this happening with my wife. You know, people see a pregnant woman and will go up to them unsolicited and start giving them advice, right?
Mm.
And whereas people see a man with a baby. And you sort of feel kind of sexy, actually. Like standing in the M&S cafe with, like, a newborn baby on your arm.
Oh, imagine if Captain Birdseye had a baby.
Oh, stop! No. I'll save that for later. Come on.
Fish fingers, yes, please.
I've got, like, a version of that Athena Man and Baby poster now, but with Captain Birdseye. too much beard.
Oh, black and white. Oh, yeah. That's lovely.
We did do a Today in History about the man and baby Athena poster as well. Which, by the way, was conceived by, like, the creative director of Athena. It wasn't an authentic... It wasn't like, let's do a series of shots with a model and then he brought his baby. It was like, I know what'll sell.
Yeah.
Let's get muscly man.
Very muscly arm. Very strong arm.
The tennis lady scratching her arms?
We haven't done that one yet. I'm looking forward... We've just done Che Guevara, but we've not done the tennis lady scratching her arms.
I'd rather hear about the tennis lady. I probably know quite a lot about Che Guevara.
So what have I learned? I mean... Yeah, so I feel like because people expect so little of you as a man, then anything you can offer is a surprise. And so, like, people don't come soliciting for you for advice. If you give other men that are about to be dads advice, simple things like try a Tommy Tippy machine, you know, that's like some revelatory thing. Oh, he knows about white noise. Do you know what I mean? So practical, people come looking, particularly men, come looking to other men for practical advice more, I feel. Mm. The thing that happened to me, which was completely unexpected, is... 6 days after my first son was born, my father dropped down dead with no, like, terminal illness, no indication that was going to happen. Thank you. And so it was weird because I couldn't have what would have been, I think, the experience I would have had because I suppose I was still grieving my father or, like, coping with how do I do this without him there, and everything that should have just been joyful was tinged with this sadness of, oh, but he would have loved this and he's not here to see it.
Gosh, that's really hard. I'm sorry.
So it was hard, but it was also, it also made you really appreciate what it was you were doing.
Yeah.
And the thing I feel like, because I'm a completely godless person, if you're not religious...
Get out of my house. Get out. Sorry. It ends now.
Satan!
Sorry, Mum.
In the absence of religion, meeting my son for the first time was the most spiritual experience I'd ever had.
Yeah.
So to then suddenly lose my father 6 days later was kind of like, it felt like something, it felt even more than it would have anyway, that something existential and spiritual was happening.
Yeah.
A change was happening to me, but also around me. I was subject to forces beyond my control. And magical forces that can give life and take it away. And the thing that I try and offer advice on that is if someone says to me, I've just lost my father or my mother, how can I bring that parent into my new child's life? Which, once you tell people of your experience, that's the thing someone might say to you. And that's the thing I've not really seen anyone write about, particularly, unless there's been some great trauma. It's one thing if, like I say, if you know there's a big terminal illness going on, or there's a sister dying, or someone's got cancer, it's different. But if you just suddenly have a death and then you have to deal with it, there are things that we sort of instinctively worked our way through, like bringing... So my dad used to race vintage cars. And this is the sort of thing that's sort of heartbreaking in a way. I've always hated cars, not interested in cars, never had an interest in cars, broke my father's heart because I wasn't interested in cars. He wanted to call me Bentley, and I wasn't interested in cars, like never interested in cars.
Thank God he didn't. Then.
Thank God he didn't, because that's either a rapper or an elderly homosexual. But anyway, I was like...
Not both.
Or both. And that's an album I would listen to. but I was like, I'm never interested in cars. And then pretty much... My son's first words were all about cars, vans, trucks, trains. I know this is standard little boy stuff, but he really went for it, and it wasn't coming from us.
Mm.
And so I was thinking, oh God, it's such a shame Dad didn't see this, but also there was just this magical sense of, like, my father's genes, like, skipped me. I picked up other things from him, like my sense of humour, and I'm dyspraxic, and he was dyslexic, and there's a way of looking at the world which I've inherited from him. But... that thing, cars, and an interest in engineering, that sort of stuff, completely skipped me. I had absolutely no influence on it, and both my boys now are obsessed with them. And yeah, and so actually, I've been able to bring my father in really naturally with them, like he's still alive. I've been able to say, oh, Grandpa Stanley had one of those, and they know he's dead, and I've always used that word and been really open about it, but... The idea of him lives on through these things, and some of his artifacts, his racing helmet and stuff like that, is in their room. Pictures of him racing vintage cars. So, yeah, I mean, that was a very specific thing that kind of happened. I don't say happened to me because it didn't. I'm just in the middle of it.
Well,
but
it did, though, didn't it? I mean, the thing of your dad dying—that was a thing that happened to you. That was a trauma that happened. Yeah, I suppose because you talked about sort of magical forces there and stuff. Did it make you more sort of? religious, if not
no.
organized. No, you're just like...
But that's a really personal thing.
Yeah.
I actually personally get comfort from the fact that that life finishes when you die. I actually don't think he lives on in the grave or in heaven. Like, it's just weird to me.
Mm. I find that very motivating. If I'm like, oh, I can't be asked to do that. I'm like, well, this is your only chance.
No, I'm doing it. It's just like, well, I've answered that question in my head, so I can stop thinking about it. Mm. Like, people spend their whole lives thinking about that question. Like, it's fine. Mm. I don't need to pray about it, and I don't need to think about it. I'm fine with that. But it just, like, the thing that non-parents don't, the thing you don't say to non-parents, which is why it's useful to have podcasts about parenting, I think, either for men or women or both, is that because you don't know what experiences people have had, they might have lost babies and had miscarriages and abortions and whatever, even when you're full of the joy of parenting, you don't really tell people what it's like, because I was worried of being like sounding a bit evangelical about it. But when you're speaking to other parents, I found myself feeling a bit more evangelical about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to say the things that I probably would have said anyway had my father not died. Like, you know, isn't it amazing when they take their first step? Isn't it amazing when you have this sort of transmutation into a different version of yourself where you're a parent? But it came with this metaphysical oomph as well, of like, I feel like like there's some sort of purpose to what's going on, or perspective on it doesn't actually matter, the other stuff doesn't matter, and all kinds of weird math stuff going on as well. So my dad died at 70, I was 35, so it's exactly halfway to his life expectancy when I became a father. So it's just this real sense of like, okay, I'm actually not the story anymore. Like, I'm in the second half of my life now, and this is about my sons.
Yeah, I've struggled sometimes with talking to friends, women friends, who are, you know, thinking about whether or not to have a baby, or whether to try for a baby, or perhaps they've tried and whether they should do IVF. And I find that really hard because, you know, there's a bit of me, the emotional bit, wants to go, yes, you should totally have a baby, and it's amazing, it's the best thing we've ever done, and it's transformative, and it's like nothing else. And but, you know, but then the rational part of me is like, well, that isn't necessarily going to be their experience. Some people have a baby and have a terrible time. The reality is that people do sometimes regret having children. It's not talked about at dinner parties, but, you know, as someone said to me once, if you go on the internet, you can find forums with reams of women who are in real trouble. Or what if I say that it's this amazing thing and of course they should do it, and then they can't get pregnant, and then they're going to feel this loss that they've missed out. And I find that just really hard. What do you say, Helen, in that situation?
Yeah, all I can ever say is that, for me, I have loved this experience. I always wanted to have a baby. I've had two, you know, pretty okay kids. They're all right. They're pretty lovely. But, you know, there's no guarantees, and you don't know how you're going to respond as a mother, and you don't know what child you're going to get. There's no ticket. There's no magic formula. But all I know is that
it's not like buying a house and you're going to have a look round and go, oh, well, the bathroom's not big enough, but it'll probably be all right.
Yeah, exactly. And it is such a personal thing. And you take, as you said, like your own experiences from your childhood and your parents and all those sort of things. So, yeah, but all I can say is that I've loved being a parent, and you know, I've made a fucking career out of it. Yeah. It's been very lucrative.
My suspicion is, though, that like, if that's your approach, even if you'd had a terrible time, you'd probably also say it was the best thing of your life, because you're that kind of person. That's how it hit you.
That's
how I feel. And I feel like I don't want to speak for what the experience would be like if, you know, we ended up having a child by accident, quote unquote, or whatever. Yeah. Or I got depressed and I, you know, couldn't cope with being a father for a while. All of those things would be bad, quote unquote, compared to the experience that I've had and hard. But I think because of the way it's hit me, I could now say that actually, nonetheless, I'd still do that. It would be both the best and worst thing for a while, but then it would still ultimately be the best thing for me.
Yeah.
But maybe you don't know until you try it.
Have you had that conversation with men then, maybe, who are on the fence about whether to have one?
I have had that conversation, although, again, I think when men talk to each other about it, these sort of honest conversations, very often it's sort of not our choice.
Mm.
I mean, it's definitely how I felt. Well, it was definitely the real politic of whether or not we had a third one. Entirely my wife's decision. Like, it's her body. She was very clear. I was very clear, like, when we got together and were thinking about that sort of stuff, that I wanted a child. I thought it was important to discuss that. But I never set any limit beyond one. Like, I think, one, you know, I want a child. That's what I want. Let's try for a child at some point. Everything else is up to her. Like, it was her decision to say, okay, yes, I'd have a second one.
I think Pete wanted, like, four, and then we had two, and he's like, that's quite
enough. Done, yeah. I would have had three if she'd have wanted three. but she very much didn't. And I was like, I respected that. So I feel like that's the conversation is kind of like, because you've got to think what's it going to do to your relationship as well. And that's the...
Oh, it's just, it only adds, really. I can't see a bad thing. Really. All just oh, so good. And oh, your body just... feels great. Oh, just well, so good.
The no sex thing, you know, again, I find men talking to each other out of female company, just the same as when women are together, you know, that conversation comes up in a way it doesn't in mixed company.
Mm.
It's like, we don't have sex anymore. You know, most of my friends at some point have said that to me. So, you know, that's a conversation.
Yeah, but I think I wish we'd talked about it more, because I think that's, again, yeah, that's a lot of, certainly we've got jokes about that at our show and they go down a storm. You think, anyone in this audience had sex more than twice?
Yeah. I remember we did used to say that. Is anyone fucking right now? And yeah. It's like,
yeah. But I wish I'd known that it comes back as well, that it's all right.
To what? It comes back?
Like, yeah, it comes back, mate. You're
oh, it's so good, so good.
Come on, let's pop upstairs right now. yeah, that's not spoken either, that actually you can, you know, you can rekindle things now and again.
Reignite, yes. Yeah.
Just put a DVD on. Anyway.
What, for him?
For the children.
Also, there is nothing like the level of responsibility with anything else in your life, is there?
Mm.
So, like, we've just got a puppy.
Why did you do that?
Right, people say that.
You've got two cats, shit on your laundry when you go on tour. What are you talking about? Who are you to judge?
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Why did you do that?
So the common reaction is, why would you do that? Because it's like having another child.
Yes.
But I do, again, I wouldn't say this to a childless person because it seems tactless, but it is, like, having now done both, it isn't. And the reason it isn't is I can neglect the puppy.
Oh, all day long. It's
the puppy's crying in the kitchen. Run, just get on with it.
He's not going to ring child love.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to pay for his therapy.
Right. You know, just like or lump it. I'm your owner. Whereas, you know,
Jesus,
up all night with children. I know.
Right now.
But you know.
But in a good way, like nice neglect. Like, it's not going to die.
I mean, the difference between my son woke me up 4 times last night.
Yeah.
And I every time went into his bedroom and had a conversation about why he was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And every time it's for a bullshit reason.
Yeah.
You know, my blanket's on the floor, I've dropped my muslin, it's too bright, I've whatever.
Yeah, I'm itchy.
Whereas the dog cries, I just literally ignore the dog. Like, I'll come down at 7. See you then.
Yeah. You know, you've got food, you've got water, you're inside.
It's just such an acceleration of any responsibility you've ever had, I think.
I had to have a 10-minute conversation with Joe last night when I really had done his story and just wanted to go to bed, about whether he should tell the girl that he loves about his secret superhero identity, which, as far as I can gather, she already knows about anyway. But it's quite sweet, and you don't resent it because it's a sweet thing. It's your child, you don't resent it, so you don't go, fucking shut up, like I would probably say to Pete.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
they're the nicest conversations, I find, as they've wound down, you've read a story, and then they'll just drop something lovely from the day or have some, and it's worth all that sort of exhaustion. And when I've rushed bedtime and missed that, I sort of think, God, I've got 24 hours in a day. Why did I rush that really delicious bit of connection with my child when I go, what I really want to do is like scroll through ASOS and see if I can buy a new bra. You know, that's that. But then, you know, it's a bit like, I always love those articles or, you know, tweets about talking to the dead, not talking to the dead, talking to people before they die. Sorry, why? I'm not high. I need to eat some more. Sorry, I'm a bit hungry. Don't we all?
Seance by the same. Sorry, go on. Sorry. Talking to the dead.
Yeah, no, I like those articles about what people, the advice older people give to the young about life and what you should spend more time on. I mean, you can't change history, obviously, but I do like that about, you know, thinking about, you know, what really matters. How am I spending my time? And, you know, considering how much time I spend on Instagram, I probably need to read.
Is that why you started smoking again?
Yeah, God, I really love smoking. I really, it's just that 5 minutes outside. Oh my God. The other night I went out for a cigarette and tried to hide it from the kids, but I needed to fart, right? And so I thought, oh, well, two birds, one stone.
Yeah.
Multitask. You'd
probably light the cigarette with it.
Yeah, true. Given how much kimchi I've been eating recently. Anyway, I did 2 loud farts and then I overheard my neighbour farting outside. I went, that's 2-1 to fart, Tennis. Complete silence. Then I went back inside. I thought that was a funny joke, but
it wasn't. Do you think they went inside and was like, that Australian crude woman?
Oh, dreadful woman. Yeah, I was really embarrassed.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, on that note, you know, I feel like we've gone deep, guys, but I feel like let's go scummy mummy confessions.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Have you got a scummy daddy confession for us, Ollie?
Well, I don't know how scummy this is, but this is a thing that's happening in my life right now, so mm-hmm. I might as well just talk about it with you. I have recently outsourced the bedtime story to Alexa.
Ooh.
For purely selfish reasons.
Yeah, fine.
It wasn't intentional. We got Harvey, my son, who's 7, we got him an Alexa for Christmas because his best mate Charlotte, who's 9, has a HomePod, mm-hmm. and he was talking about it for like a year, you know.
Yeah.
It actually comes into farting. You can get Alexa to fart, as I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
All day long.
Yeah.
And I was like, please take this out of my kitchen. It's funny the first 50 times. So I was like, well, on Black Friday, it was like £25 to get him a kid's Amazon Echo Dot or whatever. And I was like, actually, that's quarter of the price of, you know, a big Playmobil thing. And he'll love it with all his heart.
Yeah. Daily
and
joy.
And the Russians can keep an eye on him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they can monetize his interest forever. So I was like, well,
win-win.
And it's got a dragon on it. It's cute. So we got him that for Christmas. And I hadn't thought about the story. I didn't know the story thing happened. I had just thought about it for Spotify, so it's connected to my Spotify and you can do like a clean, you know, he can't play explicit songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that's good. He can then listen to his music that he likes, which is all awful,
yeah,
away from me, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And he can set an alarm for the morning, like, because he'd outgrown the grow clock, and we're like, I quite like Toby, the younger one, to have your grow clock, and I'm going to buy a second grow clock. You don't need two grow clocks in your house. So this will all work really well.
Yeah.
But then it comes with a year's subscription to Amazon Kids, which I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
And that comes with Audible stories. So you say, Alexa, tell me a story, and it starts playing a story. And he tried it once, and it was Horrid Henry, which is just perfectly targeted for a 7-year-old boy, which of course they know, because corporate overlords, evil, etc. And I was like, oh, Harvey, would you like me to read you a story tonight? Or would you like to carry on listening to
Alexa?
And he genuinely was like, no, I'd like to listen to my Alexa, please, Daddy. And there was a part of me that was like, I'm a fucking audio professional. Do you realise how much I should charge you for reading you the Gruffalo? But then there was another part of me that was like, oh, okay, well, I guess at some point I was always going to transition out of doing the bedtime stories. He's 7 now. It was probably going to come at 8 or 9, I guess. It's just a bit premature.
He's very advanced. Maybe,
maybe we mix it up a bit. Maybe I let Alexa babysit him 4 or 5 nights a week and I just insist on reading to him a couple of times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried that and it's working really well. I'm like,
there you go.
You're available other times. You know, it's not like you come home late from, you know, I just did a quote-unquote job. You're around a lot more than other dads who'd be working hours and hours and hours away. So you're available. You know, the story time for Alexa sounds fine.
Let the professionals do the job. Like if Pete came to me and said, do you want to watch an episode of The Wire or I'll just read you the script? I'll do all the voices.
Exactly.
I'd be like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. It's literally, do you want me reading The Giraffe, The Pelly and Me or Imelda Staunton? Like, I understand why he's making that choice.
Yeah.
But I guess the scummy part of it is, what do I do with that half an hour? Well, I go downstairs and make myself a dirty martini half an hour earlier than I would have done otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's me time. It's not him time, you know?
So my confession is, well, first of all, it's just a brag. So last week I attempted the Guinness World Record for the longest time ever playing Power Wash Simulator. Have you heard of this game?
I understood all of the words in the sentence, but not in combination. No,
so Power Wash Simulator is what it sounds like. It's a game where you just power wash it.
Right.
You have a range of nozzles,
oh,
you can buy different
so
guns,
good.
Uh-huh.
different rubber gloves. In the new expansion, you can power wash Lara Croft's house. I'm a big Tomb Raider fan, so I love that.
That sounds therapeutic.
It's very therapeutic. There's no music. There's no. It's just the white noise of the water.
I understand. Again, since becoming a parent, gardening.
Delightful.
I never used to garden. Now I garden for that kind of meditative.
I can't just be fucked with gardening because that involves actual work. But Power Wash Simulator, you just sit there. And I really like this game, and I like it so much. I thought, I wonder if there's a Guinness World Record for playing this. And it turns out there wasn't. So it turns out I decided to set one, and the minimum you can play is 24 hours. So I played it for 24 hours.
Of any video game, if you want to set a Guinness World Record?
That's the minimum for any video game.
That's a great fact. I will look into
it. And lots of things. I think the one for Halo is like 51 hours.
Jesus.
You can do it in teams, but you have to provide loads of evidence. Like, you can't just write to Guinness and say, oh, I played this game for 30 hours.
She had to film it all. You had two cameras, just in case.
Two cameras and the stream camera. It's all a whole thing. And we raised 10 grand for charity for the Born organisation.
That's not scummy.
Baby. That's
Where's
not
the scummy bit?
This is just the braggy bit. we raised 10 grand.
That's amazing.
So that was all amazing.
Ellie raised 10 grand. She did a very good job.
You were there. So I had like special guests. So I had Helen there for the first couple of hours. I had some TV comedians popping in. So Alistair Beckett King popped in, and then my children came home from school. And I was like, guys, because I've been reading them Alistair's children's book, which we've talked about, Montgomery Bon Bon, which is excellent. And I was like, guys, this is the guy who wrote the book. He wrote Montgomery Bon Bon. And the 11-year-old was like, okay, have we got any crisps? And then and then the 8-year-old came in. I was like, look, it's Alistair, he wrote the book. And Joe went, oh, books are for amateurs. So not only did he
what
say
does that even
this,
mean?
I don't know. Not only did he say it to the man who'd written the book I'm reading at bedtime, he said it on the internet to literally thousands of people have watched this stream since. Thousands of people know.
You're welcome, Alistair.
That in my house books are considered an inferior medium. So yes, there we go. But it's a good book, isn't it?
It's an excellent book.
We raised 10 grand. I'm a world record breaker. That's the moral
and
of the story.
And Ellie was in a power wash, like a non-breathable full suit, like, you know, we wear
full hazmat,
full hazmat for the whole time, which is interesting, which leads me, because we're raising this money for the Born charity, wonderful premature baby charity, but we're going to be in Nepal Friday week on the 17th of March. We leave. This is obviously before this goes out. We'll be on Mount Everest when this podcast goes out, won't we?
Will we?
And you said you spent 24 hours in that suit, but I was talking to the people who were organising the trip, and we've got to basically stay in the same clothes for 15 days. 15 days in the same clothes. And I said, oh, so I bought some fleecy pyjamas. And they're like, oh, no, you just sleep in your clothes. I was like, okay. And they said, and then take some Canesten, because you might get a little itchy down there, because we're, you know, there's not a lot of breathing through three layers of polyfleece.
Also, if you're not bringing extra clothes because of the weight, presumably.
Yeah.
The fact that that
what
product
is... What are you saying about my body?
Because the fact that product is considered essential weight tells you that is going to be a very necessary product, I feel.
Yeah. No? I think the Caniston's very... The Compeed and Caniston is
absolutely no envy for what you're doing at all.
I'm going to say now, I'm not going to sleep in my clothes. That is a step too far.
Are you taking a fleecy pyjama?
I'm just going to take a normal pyjama.
Oh, really?
I've got a very warm sleeping bag.
Yes, I've got two. I'm going to take 14 pairs of knickers. I am.
I'm going to take...
And wear them all at once, like Joey and Friends.
Yes, no, I'll be like a babushka doll. Just a layer off every day.
I'm going to rinse them out. I think it'll be fine.
Oh, okay.
But
all right.
I don't know. Who knows? It'll be all right.
We're going to be a bit stinky, but when we get to base camp, we're going to do a comedy gig and hopefully break the world record for the world's highest ever comedy gig.
What is it with you and world record?
Oh, fucking task just, for attention.
Again, midlife crisis.
Right.
It's just a midlife crisis. Mm. It takes a huge amount of support to do it, because you have to have two witnesses for every hour that you're on. So I had to like organise 48 hours of people to watch it, and massive thanks to everyone in my Twitch community who came along and watched it and did witness statements and donated money, and it was absolutely amazing. I was properly, wasn't I? I did cry at the end.
She doesn't cry very often.
I was probably moved by people's just generosity, not just of money, but of time and support. And it was
very moving. And Ellie has this amazing community of people who watch her play video games twice a week. They're lovely people. And sometimes they come to our show, sometimes they come and have a curry with us. Lovely, yeah. Lovely chaps and ladies.
Oh, well, there we go. Well.
I don't want it to end, but we must. We simply must.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Ollie. Plug all your things.
Ollieman.com, they're all there. OlyMann.com. But if you're going to subscribe to any one of my shows, please make it Today in History with the Retrospectors. Today in History with the Retrospectors, because it's a daily show, so I get your ad money every day rather than once a month.
That's wonderful. And I love it. And I especially loved the fake Aretha Franklin episode.
Oh, my God, what a story that is.
So can you just quickly, just to whet their appetite?
Oh, I mean, how do you summarise? But basically, woman sort of taken against her will in a kind of modern-day slavery setup and told by a contact of hers who used to play fake James Brown at gigs that she should be fake Aretha Franklin because she sang so well, and then marketed her as real Aretha Franklin and took her on a tour of Florida, and it went madly out of control, and at the trial she had to sing and the judge let her off.
Yeah. Such a good story.
It's a real story.
It's so good.
That sounds amazing. I mean,
10 minutes, guys. Go in.
Good story.
Tuck in. Scenes. There we go.
Please do sponsor us if you like for this Everest nonsense. If you go to our Instagram, then the link is in the bio for our GoFundMe, is it not?
Yes, it is. And also, it will be on our website. It is on our website. You just click through as well if you're not on the Instagrams. And also, come see us live on tour. We're going all over the country. Brighton, Bristol, Bath, Basingstoke. Birmingham.
Barnsley.
Barnsley.
Wow. Yes. Anywhere else that doesn't begin with a B?
Newcastle.
Newcastle.
Rotherham.
Winchester. Milton Keynes.
Cambridge. Oh,
lovely places. Stroud. Right. That's enough admin, really.
Yes.
Ollie, you've been excellent.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, Ollie. And thank you very much for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
You started.
Yes, I did.
There's a cat at the door.
There's a cat at the door because it's snowing. Can I let my cat in?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. Beg your pardon.
No.
No. That door can't open anymore.
Okay. I thought it was fixed.
No, the other door fixed.
Ian
came and fixed the other door.
Oh, he fixed the other door.
Oh, I love cats.
That's it. Do you? I think they're sinister bastards.
Well, yeah, me too, but I love them. That's why I love them.
Well, some people marry serial killers out there.
Hello.
Apparently.
Yes, wonderful.
Oh, what is it?
Great, you too.
What have you got?
Oh, Amazon.
I'm hoping it's. I'm hoping it's my hat. Can I open it?
Yeah. Wow.
Oh,
it's my hat. It's my hat.
For what?
Oh my God.
From Nepal.
The Everest base.
Oh wow.
Oh no.
Is that an
I'm
error?
I'm not going with you.
I shall wear
That's
it.
It's worse than the last hat you bought from Nepal.
I'm really good at
worse.
I'm really good at buying terrible hats. That's a shame. They asked for a wipe. Look, that's UV 50 plus protection. Excellent UV protection.
You're Dutch.
Again. Anyway, I'm glad I'll be going to the coldest place, one of the coldest places on earth, and have a good sun
practical.
Protection.
Very practical.
Sorry.
What was I saying? Yes, yes.
Look at my hat.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.